Chapter 37, Saturday, December 14th through Monday, December 23rd, 1776. The distress of the prisoners cannot be communicated in words. 20 or 30 die every day. They lie in heaps unburied. What numbers of my countrymen have died by cold and hunger, perished for want of the common necessaries of life? I have seen it. This, sir, is the boasted British clemency. Letter written from New York describing prisoners captured at Fort Washington. Lady Seymour regained her strength by the day. I was no longer allowed to spend warm hours in her bedchamber. She took her breakfast and dinner alone, but joined the rest of the company for supper each night. Madam was saddened by her husband's aunt's return to health. The next week passed in a kitchen storm of flour and sugar, for Christmas was fast approaching. Madam's list of required delicacies was endless. Gingerbread, pies of brandied peaches and preserved cherries and mincemeat, macaroons, blancmange, Jordan almonds, sugar candy, as many kinds of cake as there were fingers on both hands. I was the dog's body in charge of keeping the oven stoked with wood and the ashes cleared out, fetching forgotten ingredients from the market, and beating eggs 10 at a time till my arm was near to fall off. Two of the soldier wives got into a terrible squabble the day the woodpile froze. Hannah told Mary it was her turn to fetch home the buckets from the tea water pump, and Mary said no, 'twas Hannah's turn. Back and forth they went, the words getting hotter as their tempers grew shorter. "I went yesterday," Mary said loudly as she poured boiling water into a basin. "You know that for a fact because you told me my nose was the color of a cherry when I came in." Hannah shook her head as she scrubbed the floor. "No, no, no, that was 2 days ago. Yesterday I slipped on the ice and fell on my backside. Near broke my tailbone, I did. Could barely come up the steps this morning." "You're a lying cod face, you are," Mary said. Hannah threw the brush in the bucket and water splashed on the floor. "Who you calling a liar?" Sarah, the boss lady, came through the door just as Mary rounded the table, her hands balled up into fists. Sarah was getting close to her time and had a bit of a temper herself. She slammed the door so hard the whole house shook. "Shut your gobs," she shouted. "I'll report the pair of you to the colonel if you don't straighten up. There'll be no more brawling or caterwauling in this kitchen." "But," they both said. Sarah leveled such a glare at the pair of them, I thought their hair would catch fire, and I suddenly saw a way clear to my own purposes. "Begging pardon, Miss Sarah, ma'am," I said meekly. "What do you want?" she said, her eyes still on the other women. "I can fetch the tea water," I volunteered. Mary shook her head back and forth. "Oh, no, she won't. She'll tarry at the shops to get out of her own chores. Make one of them men do it, I say." "I'm the first one awake to build up the fires," I explained. "The shops are still closed then. I'll dash up to the pump and be back before the sun comes up." Sarah gave me a suspicious look. "Why would you take on extra work, special with it being so cold and dark in the morning?" "I was raised in the country, miss. Too much time inside makes me feel poorly. I like walking in the fresh air, even if it is cold." 'Twas mostly a lie, but the tea water pump was right close to the prison. Fetching water would give me a chance to check on Corson every day. Hannah picked up her scrub brush and knelt on the floor again. "Let her go, I say. Saves us the trouble of freezing our tails off." She dipped the brush in the bucket. "Don't know what possessed me to follow my Jimmy to this godforsaken colony." The next morning found me headed up island long before the sun rose. When I knocked on the guardhouse door of the prison, it was opened by a soldier I'd never seen before, a short man with black hair, sky blue eyes, and a scowl. "You can't come in," he said after I explained my errand. "Regulations been changed." "Tell her about the windows," called another soldier, warming himself by the fire. "The regulations permit civilians to deliver food and sundry provisions, but not firewood," added the man at the hearth, yawning. "But not firewood," repeated the first man. "There will be regular patrols round the perimeter of the building to ensure that civilians do not tarry overlong in conversation with the prisoners. And we'll be checking on the grub you give them," said his companion. "Guards will inspect all civilian donations," the first man said formally. "If you deliver contraband items, you will be imprisoned yourself." I shivered once. a scones and jam contraband? Not yet. Back outside, I walked around the front of the building, trying to figure where Corzine's cell lay. Some prisoners were already awake, their hands and arms wrapped in rags sticking through the bars of the window. Corzine's cell lay to the back of the building. I rounded the corner and stopped. This was where the burial pits were dug. The pits were just a little smaller than the cells, dug down the height of a grown man. One of them had already been filled with bodies and covered again with dark mud. Two lay open and empty, sprinkled with snow like sugar on a cake. I did not know how many bodies would fit in each. I shivered again and pulled my cloak tight, then turned my back to the graves and counted the windows. 2, 3, 4, until I came to the window I hoped led to Corzine's cell. The eastern sky had brightened enough for me to see all around, but the inside of the prison was dark. I stepped up to the building. The bottom of the window was just above the top of my head. I stood on tiptoe and stretched my hands up to the bars. "Hello," I called in a hushed voice. "Corzine? Anyone?" The nasty fellow who had tried to steal my bucket on my first visit, Dibden, leaned his face against the bars. He had a blanket around his shoulders and Corzine's hat up on his head. "Won't let you in no more, eh?" "They changed the rules. Can you fetch my brother, please, sir? He's sleeping." I wanted to pull the bars apart, snatch the hat from his head, and thrash him with my fist and shoes, but that was impossible. I forced honey into my voice in a humble tone. "Well, then, may I please speak to your sergeant?"
"Sergeant's dead." He turned his head and spat. "I'm in charge now. I'll take the victuals you brought."
I started to reach into the bucket to hand the scones through the bars, but stopped. "How do I know my brother's not dead, too? Wake him up, please."
Dibden opened his mouth but closed it without a word. His hunger was stronger than his temper, it seemed. He turned to someone in the cell.
"Get the black boy over here."